Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, December 18, 2009. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Signals from the Fed sent the U.S. dollar soaring and commodity bulls retreating. We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Erdman of EFG out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The Federal Reserve sent out both dovish and hawkish signals this past week, vowing to keep the prime rate between 0 and 0.25 while also indicating that a recovery is underway. Traders chose the hawkish side of the story, and the dollar rallied. Is a major bottom now in place for the dollar index, and what does it mean, if so, for commodities going forward? Wayne Nelson.
Well, Dave, I think as we look at this, we saw that the recovery started that way. We saw another thing happen the same week here is that Greece and Spain had some problems with their banking industry. Germany would like to raise the interest rates, but they don't dare. And the euro dollar also took a dump, and it was the lowest it's been since Labor Day. So, you know, this does mean that there's a little bit of non-optimism towards the grains going into the first of the year just because of exchange rates. But I think that all in all, the big thing that everybody's looking at is this rebalancing of the index funds.
Paul Cooley, then, is this a matter of short covering on nervousness, or is there something else going on here with perhaps some longs looking to enter this U.S. dollar market?
I think that the big factor here, Dave, is that definitely the commodity index funds and the commodity funds and public in general were very, very long and bullish commodities. And, of course, they feel that we are – some of it was an inflationary hedge, and some of it was basically a recovery from the year that we've seen of very basically oversold conditions. My general impression here is that I think that the market is basically, with those higher prices, we saw a lot of stimulus of extra production in the world, and I think that we're could see a pretty good correction here in the next 30 to 40 days in just the ag commodities alone.
So a correction to the downside?
Yes, sir.
Pete, when we look at that dollar and we see how it screamed higher this week and what it potentially did to commodities, we have to stop and think for a moment. How will these funds contend with a bullish dollar?
If we look back to when we had the highs in corn and beans, the dollar was at its highest. So it's not just a dollar. Right now, I think it's more world economy. We're not sure that the European economy is any good right now. And that helps push everything lower because of less usage. I think it's not the dollar by itself. I think it's the economies of the world. China's doing really well. But now Europe's struggling. And that's going to hurt everything as far as price-wise. And I think that has as much to do with it as the dollar screaming upward. The last time we had 790 corn, the dollar was at its highest, so it's not just the dollar.
Paul Cooley, where does crude oil go over the next 30 to 90 days?
Well, Goldman Sachs feels that the marketplace is in crude oil and energy is probably the most bullish. My general feeling is that $72 to $78 is going to be a trading range that's going to bore us to death. I think the big factor here is that the real bullishness comes in the world economies, and particularly the Chinese and the Pacific Rim countries, where and possibly South America. But right here in the U.S., I think we're looking at basically a very boring $72 to $78 trading range.
If, Wayne, we're a boring $72 to $78, and I am a trader of grains and a fund of some sort, that's not going to excite me very much. I want to see crude oil make that next leg up.
That doesn't mean we're going to get that to happen. I think that, one thing we've seen over this past year is seen the index funds move from being very heavily in the energies to being much more heavy in the grains. So, they've fallen out of favor a little bit with just the speculative money to push them higher as far as the crude oil goes.
Let's go ahead and look at how prices fared in the week just past. March wheat had a high on the week of 548, a low of 514 and a quarter. March wheat finishing the week at 528, down 9.5 from last week. July, 552.5, the settlement there, down 7.75. March corn, the high 413.75, the low 391. March corn finishing the week 397.75, down 6.75. December 430.25, down 8. January beans, the high 1070, the low 1008. January beans settling 1008.25, down 23. November 986, down 24.5. Friday Informa released its final production estimates and first look at 2010-11 acres. Corn production, Informa says, 12.97 billion bushels. Soybeans, 3.42 billion bushels. And then the acreage, wheat acres, 55.6 million. Winter wheat, 39.4. Corn acres, 89.5. Soybeans, 76.9. Paul, what do we make of all this?
Well, it was a very interesting report. And, of course, just looking back from last year, we see, 4 million acres of CRP acres coming on stream with 3.8 million less wheat acreage planted. And we didn't get probably a million to a million and a half acres of corn and soybeans planted at the normal time. So the acreage mix is bearish, number one. The percent of the corn acreage increase is probably also beating up on the bull. But the big factor here and the rest of the story is that we're going to see $2 or $3 down probably by planting time in soybeans. And that's really where the rebalancing problem comes in. Last week on Commodity Week, they beat the drum to death on people not planting corn because they're not going to get the crop planted and crop planting and fertilizer on. But that's a long ways down the road, and it just doesn't materialize that way. Price is still the big fertilizer as far as corn production is concerned.
If soybeans, Wayne, does have a seven handle, as Paul is suggesting, come planting time, what does that do to corn?
Well, it does just what Informa said here, Dave. It increases the corn acres. People are going to plant a few more acres of corn out there. And as far as not getting it planted and talking about it, does anybody look at the size machinery that most of these guys are tilling out here now and how few a days it takes to put a crop in the ground with 24 and 48-row planters?
Another factor on the corn is look at the input costs last year versus this year. Fertilizer costs are down a third or two-thirds or half. So the input cost for corn is a lot less. They've already had a chance to lock in over $4 cash on next year's corn and $10 on next year's beans. And I know a lot of farmers have got half of it locked in. So they're going to plant where the money is, and that price will help determine those acres, not that we had a late fall this year.
Let's look ahead, everyone. And based on what you know right now, what do you believe will be the key points that grain future traders will focus on in 2010? And Pete will stay with you.
I think they'll focus on the world economy and what's the economy using. China will be a big one. So will the Asian areas of what are they using and how are they growing. I think weather has a little bit to it. But if you look at the last year, the weather was horrendous and we still got through it. So I think it's the world economy and then the various economies of the world, what they're going to spend on food.
Wayne?
Well, one of the things we want to keep an eye on is the real versus the dollar as to how expensive South American grain is compared to the U.S. to see whether they do leave us as soon as we've all been calculating as far as the cash market comes come February or March. I think the other thing is, we're going to be watching the weather a little bit to see if we do get out and get things planted, if we have the delays like we had this past year. But most of all, we're going to be watching China. China is the whole impetus to this commodity boom as far as they are the growing country, the country that's out there spending money and buying grains and keeping us, keeping the shipments going very hard and very fast.
Paul.
Well, of course, the traditional things that we watch, of course, is exports, feed usage, and ethanol demand. And the big part of that equation, of course, is China. But commodity funds really make our job hard. And they have put in a trading-type programs that make all the old traditional systems look old and obsolete, and they're going to keep us second-guessing. My general opinion is that the easy money that the funds have made this year, it's going to be a little harder game for them to play, even though they are the big bullies on the block.
Let's turn the tables. I'm going to put each of you in the question asking driver's seat with an opportunity to get an answer from the other panelists. Paul, you get to ask the first question of Wayne and Pete.
Okay, you know, we all hear about this commodity futures industry, and we are all a big part of it. But do you think the commodity futures exchange, we're going to see any reforms in Washington that come out with new trading rules this coming year?
Wayne?
We would hope so, but I'm going to say that it's going to be hard to do because, number one, the exchange itself loves the index funds, loves the big funds, because that's where their volume lies anymore. As we said, it's going to be they've been very hard on us, and it's made the market very, very volatile. And that has washed out a lot of our small traders, and it is a tougher job every day. I think the other thing is the way they keep talking about solving the convergence between the cash and the board price. When we do have these funds driving things up, they don't seem to be able to see the forest for the trees and what will really work. And any of their ideas have been really stupid.
And Pete?
Well, I think they will make changes. I don't know if that's good or bad. Whenever you have more players in the game and more money involved, without them in the game the last couple of years, we wouldn't have seen the high prices in grains that we've seen. So they've been good for the farmer and good for us and got people interested in things. Why would you go put money in a bank and draw 1% to 2% interest when you can go in and buy crude oil or palladium or something and hopefully make a lot more than 1% or 2%? And when you have rigid rules that don't allow people to play, it hurts the markets totally.
Wayne, your question.
Well, I'm wondering if they think that we will be able to see a better convergence as far as the cash grain prices and the price on the Board of Trade have been over the next year.
Paul?
Well, my opinion, Wayne, unless we have some sort of a cash settlement process, it's going to be hard to happen. And until the Commodity Futures Trading Authority or they change the actual funds from having cash positions, in other words, unlimited positions that they can push the market, it's going to be awfully hard to see a lot of convergence. My general impression is that unless there is some real reforms there, I don't think that we're going to see a lot of discrepancies in the marketplace.
Pete?
I don't see that convergence getting that much better unless we have a short crop. And then you'll see it because everybody needs it during a short crop time. When you have a large crop like we had this past year, I don't see the convergence, even with new rules, unless maybe the cash would help work with that.
Pete, your question.
What would you do in the new year to protect yourself on those acres of corn that you're going to plant?
Wayne.
Well, first off, we've told the farmers to take the first 25% and sell at the elevator because of the high margin requirements and the volatility in this market. Past that, we went ahead and hedged the next 20% on the board, and then we're going to start using or buying some puts or bear put spreads as to lock this in. We've been very aggressive sellers here above the $4 cash mark and above the $10 cash in the soybeans. So basically when beans got over 1040 to 1050 level, we were aggressive sellers. Also on the corn in the 420 bracket.
Paul?
Well, I've been encouraging people writing some $5 and $6 new crop calls. That's number one. Number two, I haven't discouraged them to sell at 440 to 450 December corn futures at the elevator. I have been reluctant to see them do much new crop hedging at that level for the simple reason I'd rather see them sell the cash and we defend it with option bull call spreads in the futures. But I think it is a deal, Pete, that a person is going to have to become more alert because I think there's enough acres out there to meet demand, and we could see prices, erode here in the next 9 months.
We'll be back in 2 minutes with our guest, Steve Erdman of EFG out of Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The third week of December was a quiet one across the state of Illinois. Temperatures were generally below normal this week, ranging from near normal in far southern Illinois to as much as 6 to 7 degrees below normal in northwestern and northern Illinois, where a 3 to 8 inch snow cover helped keep temperatures down. Through the middle of the month, temperatures were running 2 to 3 degrees below normal across the state of Illinois. This was also a dry week. The last precipitation of significance was last Saturday as a weather system moving through the Gulf states produced a band of 1/2 to 1 inch rain across central and southern Illinois. Otherwise, the rest of the week was precipitation free. Two Clipper-type weather systems will likely bring some measurable light snow to northern and central Illinois this weekend. We should have a couple of cold but dry days to start next week, but it looks like snow could begin to return to Illinois late Wednesday night or Thursday. While it is early to be too specific, there is a potential that this system could bring a white Christmas to much of Illinois. Either way, it looks like cold weather is likely to remain with us for the next 7 to 10 days. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Wayne Nelson, Pete Manhart, and Paul Cooley. Joining us today by phone is Steve Erdman of EFG in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for being with us today, Steve.
Thanks for having me, David.
Is there a prevalent opinion among Chicago traders regarding the price action in the U.S. dollar index? And if so, what does it suggest for commodities?
I think most of the people that I hear talking about the dollar are mindful of the fact that we've got pretty good overhead resistance in some of the longer-term charts. The March contract tested 78.50 today and rejected it. We closed slightly higher, but it still looks to me as if, you know, we're on a pretty good rally right now, and I think the market's got some more backing and filling to do before we see a protracted change. But I think some of the economic news that came out this week is encouraging to some of the carry spreads. So that's why you're seeing people moving to the dollar.
Questions for Steve? Pete Manhart.
Steve, on your old crop, corn or beans, pick one. What would you be doing with it if you have any left?
Pete, I think the basis levels are pretty sick right now. I think SIF basis is probably at one of the weaker points it's been in many, many years. Decatur seems to be pretty steady at 15 under the March, but I think we've got a lot of potential problems with quality from the way this crop came in. I think a lot of it was harvested over 30%, and I think that's going to make for brittle corn, which makes for fines, which, you know, creates problems in on-farm storage because the airflow doesn't move through the bin like it should, so I think you're going to end up with damage. And I think another thing that we're seeing in the Eastern Belt and obviously up in the Dakotas where they're still trying to bring some crop in is some of the mold issues that they're getting into and how that's bleeding into the DDG market and how it's affecting some of our demand. So I think Paul said that he, if I understood him correctly, that he'd be selling some of the deferred markets. That would be my preference right now to see if we could get some basis improvement, because I don't see how the market's going to get much worse basis-wise once it's an unusual year, obviously, because we're in the middle of December and there's still corn being harvested, whatever they can get to. And I still like when the market tests the high side of the current 40-cent trading range, is going out there and putting some fences on, buying puts and selling out of the money calls.
Why, Nelson?
Yeah, Steve, how, as we look ahead to the crop that we're going to put in the ground this spring, how aggressive have you been at pricing new crop corn and beans?
Not terribly, Wayno. I think I don't ever advocate in, you know, even before the first of the year, getting much more aggressive than 20 or 25%. I would be as flexible as I can be with your strategies, and I think that's the important thing for all the producers to understand in their relationship with their brokers. Because they put some marketing strategies in place, it doesn't mean that they're locked into, you know, that particular strategy. There's ways of adjusting, rolling up calls, or as Paul stated, doing some bull call spreads. So, I mean, I would be again at the high side of the current trading range, looking at establishing fences. I like the fence strategy. I think it's a good one.
Steve, wouldn't you want to be a little more aggressive in beans with the potential for futures to really drop out of bed? Maybe you have a seven handle.
Well, again, I think if the dollar respects the 78.5 area and we start to see a weaker dollar come in, you might see the meal market recover a little bit. I think we ran into some pretty good resistance in meal up at the 325 area, but we still have more of a sideways to a higher bias in meal. I would expect the market's going to find pretty decent support on breaks down to 290 in my estimation. The meal market obviously has reacted since probably May to a lack of available supplies and a pretty steady demand for meal. I know that most of the crushers wouldn't sell meal until they had the beans booked. I think in my recollection, this is the longest the bull spreads have worked. I think they're probably done for a minute, but, you know, they've still got a ways to go in South America before they can safely say they've made their crop.
Paul Cooley.
Steve, I've known you for almost 30 years, I think, and tip of the hat. Wanted to ask you this. Informa basically came in with a production number of 47 million increase from the last report on corn, and 102 million bigger than November beans. Always on the commodity shows in the past here, we've been hearing about this smaller production because of this late harvest. What's the deal here, and which is Sparks really right?
I think they are. I really do. I think by and large, the average yields were much better than people expected. I think from the time we put the crop in the ground, or we attempted to put the crop in the ground, that people have been amazed at how the genetic makeup of the seed and the ability of the crop to really grow through adversity to produce the kind of yields we've got coming in. I it's mind-boggling to me, but I think some of the yields you've got out west, I still don't think people have really gotten a handle on, and it was an adverse year. But, you know, I know of some guys that were it went out right after the big snows that they got, and it was cold enough that they were running snow through their combine and getting the job done. So the U.S. producer is very resilient, and they are tremendously mechanized, as you guys were talking about earlier. You know, they've just done an amazing job of growing a huge crop. And in my in my mind, Paul, we need it. I mean, we need it. There's a tremendous demand base, both here for ethanol and, to a lesser degree now, feed, and in the world market, the appetite of China, as I think Wayne was mentioning earlier.
Steve, one other one. You know, we're hearing about all the government reform and changes in the futures industry, and we understand, you know, if it's a derivative, it's going to be exchange-traded. Do you see many changes that are coming on, and should there be a lot of changes coming on in the next year?
I believe there should. I believe that that Brooksley Bourne has testified to what she tried to accomplish back in the 90s and how she foresaw this problem where we didn't have adequate regulation to really keep the greed factor from overwhelming the market. And I think that's what we've been through in the last 3 to 5 years, the unmitigated greed of some entities and individuals, and how, because all of a sudden they didn't realize they're all long one product. I mean, we all know from our industry and from our experience what happens if everybody gets long something and all of a sudden everybody's looking around trying to get out at the same time. I think economically that's what really happened to the U.S. economy and the world economies. I do believe they should be cleared. I think the exchanges and the futures exchange and the CME group are tremendous examples for how settlement, transparency, and clearing are so important to any derivative product that's traded.
Pete Manhart?
We hear about how the economy is supposedly improving, but you go to the man on the street and you see all the unemployed. What's your take on the economy here and in the world, and how is that going to affect our prices for the coming year?
Well, Pete, I have been surprised at the resiliency of corn. It's no secret. I've done a few meetings in the past several months where, you know, my message to the producer was you've got a lot more downside risk than you have upside potential. The fact of the matter is, I think my partner Lee coined a term that I think is very good. We've got a third fundamental with the flow of index fund money and investment money. And you guys touched upon this also. Why, and I think you did, Pete, why do people want to leave their money in a bank at 1% to 2% when they can go into the commodity futures market and have some potential returns? And I think people realize, or a lot of people do, I believe, that in 2008 when and a lot of the other hedge fund managers were having a tough time, the managed futures business and individual managed accounts were one of the only asset classes that were profitable. So it's I think the economies of the U.S. and the world have suffered greatly. I think the liquidity of the banks is slowly coming back. I think I'm a farm boy, so I'm eternally optimistic about where we're going. I think, again, to talk about specifically our grain markets, our demand base is so broad, it's hard for me to get terribly bearish because of some of the decisions that we've made over the last 30 years and the amount of corn, for example, that we are grinding for ethanol. So I think the economies of the world are going to grow and the demand is going to continue to grow.
Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Love being here.
Steve Erdman of EFG out of Chicago, Illinois. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.